Okay, we're picking up from the Gemara, three lines from the bottom of Chav Tes Amud Beis with the words of Yosef Rabbi Avin. We're going to continue discussing the Shita of Bar Pada. So just remind ourselves, what was Bar Pada's Shita? The Mishnah told us, not all the way on Chav Ches Amud Aleph, the Mishnah told us, Harei Anatilas Elu Korban Ad Sheik Tzotzu. The person says that the saplings are going to be considered like Hektish until they are knocked down. Then the Lacha is, they're going to be Kadosh until that point. And Bar Pada says that Bar Pada tells us that they're going to be continued. They're going to be padan chozon v'kadoshos. That if you redeem them, they automatically become kadosh again until they are knocked off. And podem achas v'de, and then you have to redeem it one more time. So we're analyzing the fact that if a person tries to redeem them, he has to. They automatically become kadosh again. So now the Gemara says Yosef, Rabbi Avin, Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Kamed, Rabbi Yirmiyah. The Kamisnani Rabbi Yirmiyah, so the Gemara is already reading a story. Rabbi Avin and Rabbi Yitzchak, the son of Rabbi, were sitting before Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah was a teacher, apparently. And Rabbi Yirmiyah was tired, was dozing off. Yasri v'ka'armis, Rabbi Avin and Rabbi Yitzchak were sitting and learning, and they were talking and learning. Le Bar Pada, Zabar Padan Chozos Agdushas, the Shita Bar Pada that we just mentioned. That when it comes to Natios, if he redeems the Natios, the saplings, they automatically become Kodosh again, as we mentioned. And then only once they're knocked down, are you allowed to redeem them at that point? So says the Gemara, turning on to Lamed Amud Aleph, Tivshos Deboi Rav Yoshia. This would actually be able to answer Rav Hoshia's question. What was Rav Hoshia's question? Rav Hoshia told us, Had no sin, shtei prutos leisha, ve'armar la ba'achas, hitchachi le'ayom, ve'achas hitchachi le'achar shegaresh. So a person gave two prutos. We know the minimum amount of Harei Miskadesh is Leib, Tavaz or Bekesef is going to be Kiddushi Kesef is a pruta. Aisha Miskadesh is Bepruta, Beshavet Pruta. So you have to give her a pruta. So he gave her two prutas. And what does he say to her? He says, with one of these coins, I want you to become married to me today. Great. So they're going to be married. However, Va'achas is Kachi Lil'achar Shegaresh. And the other one, I'm going to divorce you a few months after this. And after I divorce you, then I would like that other the other coin to be taking effect in the Kesef Kedushin. So the Gemara wants to suggest that Hachadami to have a Kedushin, that according to Bar Pada's interpretation of the Mishnah, it's clear that the second marriage would in fact be valid. Because Bar Pada understands the Mishnah is telling us somebody who is Makdish an item, and you're able to make a Tanai that it should automatically be Kadosh after you redeem it. Once I redeem it, you've removed it from the status of Hektish, and yet automatically it becomes Hektish again. So in that same way, the Gemara is trying to compare and say that a woman should be able to, when it comes to the man with the woman, should be able to make a Tanai that it should automatically be remarried to him after divorce if he gave her the Kesef Kedushin. So that's what's going on over here. So Rav Hoshia had a question. Rav Hoshia was wondering whether or not the second marriage could take effect if the woman is not allowed, meaning not allowed, because she's already married right now. So how could you tell me that Kesef Kedushin is going to be Chal, because the whole interim period where he's married to her, the Kesef shouldn't be Chal. That was his suffix. On the one hand, the moment she accepts the second Pruta, she is allowing the second marriage to take place, the moment she's single. However, on the other hand though, the second marriage is only created, it's only going to be scheduled to take effect after the period of the first marriage, which she's invalid to use that Kesef Kedushin because she's already married. So at the end of the day, that is the suffix of Rav Hoshia. And according to Bar Pada, the Mishnah is trying to answer this by saying that Bar Pada's answer would answer this because when the Madir is Makdish the Netios, he's saying that until they are knocked down, they're going to be continuously be able to be Hektish. So at the moment the neder is made, the netios are eligible to become hektish. However, during the period between the neder and the pidyon, the netios are not eligible for hektish because they are already hektish right now. Still, the Mishnah tells us that in fact that you initially made this tonight, that would in fact make them automatically kadosh. And we see that a person has the ability to kind of hold off on a kinyan, and during the period of eligibility during the interim period of ineligibility is not a problem. That would not cause the act that you originally had done to be removed, and therefore in Rav Hoshia's case, that would mean that the second marriage would come into effect, and that's what we're trying to bring a raya from over here. So the Gemara points out that what happened in the story, Itar Rav Yirmiyah was dozing off. He heard this conversation and got all awakened by the sound of the Torah, the Talmidim learning. Amar Lu, and he said to them, My kadaminisun padanhu lepadan achirim. How are you comparing the case where you are redeeming the netios to a case where others are redeeming them? Hacha amar Rabbi Yochanan told us padanhu chozos ekdushos to analyze Bar Pada that if he redeems them, then they automatically become kadosh again. However, what happens if somebody else was poda them? What if other people redeem them. Podim Achirim, says Rabbi Yochanan, Einan Chozros Kedushos. They do not automatically become Kodesh again. Even if they are later reacquired by him, the moment they enter the possession of somebody else, therefore his influence over them is now over, and his earlier hektish falls away, and we don't assume they automatically become kadosh. So Bar Pada was telling us this halacha, Rabbi Yochanan qualified it, that there has to be some sort of attachment to the item that you had. If at any point you remove that attachment, i.e. someone else's podem, so then you have removed that connection, you have removed that connection with you and the item, and therefore your original tie is no longer allowed to be chal, because if somebody else is going to redeem them, then the netiyah left your control, and that control is removed, and therefore it not automatically become kadosh. And the Ram points out, even if you later rebuy them, because from the new owners, they do not become kadosh because you had a time in between it would have been completely negated. So says the Gemara, v'isha kipadua acherim dami. So too in our case of a woman. Of a man who is marrying a woman, and he makes this tnai, when he divorces her, it's going to be similar to padua achirim. Because in case of a woman, the moment that she is nisgarsha, the Ran says, then yotzer mirshus abal, and she's in her own rishus, and the end kedushin is not going to be chal in alea. The kedushin is not chal, and therefore it's similar to the case of another thing. So the Ran is bothered by this, though. The Ran says, is that really true? He says, Adraba, Isha Lepata Nudamya, that it should be more similar to him, because just like in Tisalo, they're not mamish leaving, their Yotzim Yershus Hektish, and you can be Mekadish them after. So to an Isha, Kevan Shaina Yotzim Yershus Abal, I'm reading the Ran now, Omer Yershus Atzba, Bidinu Shita Yecholis Kadish Mata, Filo Achachis is Garish. The Ran is bothered by this. He says, why not? Why don't we assume that once you gave her the Kasef Kedushin, it should be able to be Chal? So that's the question over here. So the Ran explains that when it comes to a marriage, it's affected not by a woman actively giving herself to the husband, but rather we know that the husband is the one doing the acquiring. He's acquiring a woman, so therefore she is only passive in this kinyan. And she, according to the Ran, his lashon is that he makes her like hefker, that she makes herself kilu like hefker before the husband, and then he acquires her. There's a lot of by the way deeper. You know, in Yadim over here, that like that the man is the nosin, the ish is mekabel, and how that relates to the whole nature of a marriage. Okay, but anyway, either over here, just the pasuk chat again is that she's making herself like hefker according to Ran. So in the marriage introduction, there was only one active party as the husband. So when you're now divorcing her, the Ran says you're removing the woman from the husband's control, and therefore that is ruining that connection. Very similar to our case. That's how the Ran answers this question, and therefore it comes out that Bar Pada would in fact be different. Now, the Ran points out that it still must be true that it could possibly mean the Rabbi Yoshia case is not, it's not definitely this case, because then we would have an answer to Rabbi Yoshia, and that it shouldn't be that way. But in fact, it's possible that Rabbi Yoshia's case is compared to the case of the Netiyos, that we have to point that out, the Ran says, because there still could be the suffix, but it can't be for sure that it's no active role in her marriage. Maybe to some extent it is, like there's an active role with the woman, and there, if she has some activity, then it would in fact be similar to the case of Pato Atzmo, in which case the fact that she accepted the case of Kedushin should in fact be Chal. So really, the whole point of the Ran is that to say that really we can go with both sides. Rabbi Yoshia's question is still remained unanswered. That's the whole point of the Ran. But that's what we see from over here. So now the Gemara continues. Itmar Nami, that we also see Amar Rabbi Ami, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Ami says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Lo Shanu Ela Shepadanhu. The teaching of the Netiyos are automatically going to be Kadosh is when he himself redeems them. Aval Padum Acherim Einan Chozes HaKadushos. Exactly what Rabbi Yochanan says. That when you redeem them, when others redeem them, they do not automatically become Kaddish again. And that would be another example of what we see in the name of Rabbi Yochanan qualifying Rabbi Pada, that this is actually a correct source, that also Rabbi Ami said this as well in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, next Mishnah. The next Mishnah tells us, Hanoder miyor de hayam, someone who makes a neder, answering himself from people who travel at sea, mutar biyoshvei habasha. So he's mutar to people who live who don't generally travel at sea. The Ram points out people who don't regularly, you know, go on traveling at sea. However, what if you say miyoshvei habasha, you're making a neder, answering yourself to all the people who live in the land? So then, asr miyor dayam. Then you're asr also from people who live at sea. Why is miyor dayam? Bichlal yoshvei habasha. The people who come and travel at sea, eventually they come back to land, and therefore, you know, they're going to disembark at some point. So therefore, they're considered also people who live on the land, and you're asr to derive benefit from them as well. And then the Mishnah ends off with a vague statement the Gemara is going to discuss. What is this qualifying? Lo ke'ilu she'ochim na'ako li'afo. Not those who travel from Akko to Yafo, which is a very short distance, ela b'misha darko lefarish. But rather, we're talking about somebody who travels a very long distance. Again, so this is a very vague statement from the Gemara, from the Mishnah the Gemara is going to discuss. What exactly was this qualifying? So says the Gemara now, Rav Papa v'Rav Acha b'Reid Rav Ika. They were just disagreeing about what exactly was this statement of lo ke'ilu she'ochim na'ako li'afo coming to explain. So says the Gemara, now chad masnei reisha v'chad masnei seifa. One says it's qualifying the din of the first case of the Mishnah, and the other one says that chad masnei seifa, that it's coming to describe and qualify the second case of the Mishnah. So the Gemara fleshes this out now. Man de masnei areisha. The one who says it's coming to clarify the first case of the Mishnah is telling us, Masnei Hachi, teaching us the following. Hanoder b'yordei hayam, mutter b'yordei habasha. Someone who makes a neder, answering himself to people who travel at sea, is mutter from people who live in the lands. Habayordei hayam, aser, which implies, obviously, that people who live at sea are going to be aser. And now, the Mishnah is qualifying that in the last point, v'lo ke'elu, and this implication, it's not those. Those who are aser, them are not going to be the ones, ha'holcha mi'akla yafo. He didn't intend to aser himself, those who travel from Akko to Yafo, which is a very short distance, ha'holcha ni'oshe yashenu, because they're qualified as people who live on the land. The fact that they travel such a short distance from Akko to Yafo, that clearly shows that it's not considered them as people who travel at sea. So that's one explanation of the Ram. Others explain that they're not called people who travel at sea because this trip is just someone who's going along the coast of the Mediterranean. That's not called going out. You have to go out further into the sea. Rather, it's only coming to those who go on a real journey. So according to the Ram, that means it's somebody who's spending a long time. It could be even if a close to Eretz Yisrael, but according to the Ritva, it means someone who's traveling very far away, where you're like, you don't see the coastline anymore, you're very far out into the sea. That's somebody who's considered that. So according to this version, this is a kula. We're clarifying when a person asks himself, those who travel at sea, it doesn't mean those who travel a very far distance at sea. It only means those who travel a very far distance at sea, but rather those who travel close and are on a very short journey, that's not called people who are traveling at sea. That's what the Gemara wants to say right now. The one who teaches this Mishnah, the last point of the Mishnah, he'll tell us that the Mishnah can also be understood as follows, that if it's on the Seifa, that someone says, I know der miyoshvei habasha, aser b'yordayam, someone who asers himself by a neder, asering from all those, he's permitting himself from deriving benefit from those who live in the sea. So that from those who live in the land are also going to include in that comment those who live in the sea as well. V'lo be'ilo ochim ha'akol li'afo bilvan, and that does only apply to those who travel a short distance from Akko to Yafo. Ela afilu mishdarko lefarish ho'el v'sofo lebashalas. Even those who go on very long distances, those are also included in his neder. So according to this is qualifying a chumra. I would have thought that those who are traveling at sea mamish all the time, let's say 10 months a year, they're traveling at sea. Maybe you could define them as people who are living at sea, and they're not people who live on the land. No, even those people are going to be considered people who are considered people who come back to the land, and they're considered in your neder, and therefore they're aser to you as well when you aser norday the yorday hayabasha. Now, what would come according to this version, this would be a chumra. That means that the resha, when the resha says that you're asering yourself to people who travel at sea, there is no qualification. The only people traveling a long distance are included in your neder. Even those traveling in a short distance, according to this version, would also be included in your neder, and those people would in fact be usher to you as well, even if they travel from Akko liYafo. So there's a big nafkamina between the Reish and the Seifa. The Ran points out that we pass in like this second version. So we're more machme. Those who travel from Akko to Yafo would be included in your neder if a person says that he is making a neder from all those who travel at sea. Even a short distance at sea would be included in your neder. So now the Mishnah picks up, the Gemara finishes that point. Now the Gemara picks up with another Mishnah now. Hanoder miroei chama. Someone makes a neder for benefiting from those who see the sun. So says the Mishnah, aser af besumin, is also aser to benefit from even blind people. So what did he mean? Says the Mishnah, shelo niskavin ze el misha chama roe o sun. The person who made the neder intended only those who the sun is shining on. Those who the sun is shining on means everybody. So therefore, even somebody who's blind would be included in his neder. So the Gemara asks, my taima, what's the reason that the neder is understood like this? Midiloka amar min haroin, because he doesn't say the lashon from the people who are seeing. I mean, haroin to exclude, that would exclude the blind. His reference would have been clearly limiting the blind. Lafuke, so then it must be So what is he coming to exclude by saying min ha roe chama? It means lafuke dagin v'ubarim. It's excluding of fish and fetuses. That when it comes to fish, the Tosfos point out that the sun is kilu blocked by the water, and therefore they're not really getting seeing the sun. And fetuses obviously are enclosed by their mother's wombs, but every other living creature Tosfos think would be included in roe chama. I was actually wondering what does it mean the person is being madir fish yet, right? He's not going to be benefiting from fish. How is it that he's not been benefiting from fetuses? What exactly is the ubarim? What type of benefit would a person have from a fetus? I don't know. Tzarichian, what that point is. That next Mishnah. Mishnah tells us, Hanoder Meshochrei Harosh. Someone makes a neder answering himself from dark-headed people. Aser Bekarachin of Alei Sevos is also going to be aser to benefit from bald people and from old people whose hair is gray or white. And obviously, the similar young people who light colored hair, the Rosh says, like blonde people, those are going to be usher as well. Mutar b'nashim miktan, however, is permitted to benefit from women and from children. She'ein nikron shchoyrei haroish ella anashim. Dark header refers to generally an expression used for men. So Mark's going to explain, how do we know this? My taima. Why are we assuming that person who is shochrei haroish, is dark headed person? How do we know that that's including bald people and white haired people who are light skinned? Because the person doesn't say from those with hair. The expression dark-headed can go, it can be understood, it's clearly not, definitely not excluding bald people, because it refers to hair-colored rather than the presence of having hair there. So the Madir wanted to exclude bald people, he would have said, as we're pointing out, Balei Se'ar, those who have hair. So once the expression, the dark head is not taken literally to regards to bald people, it cannot be taken literally either with regards to the light-haired people either, blondes or things like that. It must be understood as just a sense that describing all men as opposed to women, as the Gemara is going to explain. Mutar b'nashim v'ktanim, and it's permitted to benefit from women and from children. She'ini kran shchoy arosh ela nashim. Dark-headed is only referring to people who are generally adult men, not children. So Gemara, or women either. Gemara says, "My taima." What's the reason for this understanding? Because anashim zimdim demiskasu reshayu zimdim megale reshayu. That men sometimes their heads are covered and sometimes their heads are uncovered. However, anashim laolam mikasu, women always have their hairs covered out of tznias, right? That's what you need to have their hairs covered. This is actually one of the rayas. It's not clear that obviously we hold that it's only a married woman, but it's not so 100% clear. The Rambam could indicate that it's actually any woman above the age of Bas Mitzvah. The Teimanim, I believe, had that practice when they came to Eretz Yisrael. All the girls over the age of Bas Mitzvah had some sort of covering to cover their hair. That's the Gemara over here seems to be mashma like that. It seems to say every adult woman above the age of 12 is covering their hair. Or you could just say, to Lav Davka this Raya, and say, no, it really meant only those who are married, and therefore meant all women, generally adult women, are getting married, so therefore it means that the women are included in Lashem Le'adam. But it's just an interesting ara to point out, this seems to be actually one of the rayas for those who hold, that we showed them that hold, that anyone over the age of Bas Mitzvah has to cover their hair. Uktanim l'olam migalu. However, children always have their head uncovered. So when it comes to covering your hair, When it comes to men, sometimes they're exposed, sometimes they're not exposed. As opposed to women, now you could ask yourself, what do you mean? Now we wear a kippah, aren't we covering our hair all the time? So this seems to be a raya for what the Achronim point out, that in the times of the Gemara, it was only a midas chasidus to wear a kippah at all times. That they're never walking four amos without a constant reminder of Hashem's presence is a midas chasidus. That's how the Achronim point out. However, there's a famous Taz, I think he's quoting the Bach, if I'm not mistaken, but the Taz says very famously that nowadays wearing a kippah is a din de oraisa. What do you mean, how could it be? It's a din of the Gemara, it's a midas chasidus. What changed? So says the Taz, because we know that who walks without a kippah on? Goyim. And therefore, but what defines a person as a frum yid when he's walking in the streets is wearing a kippah. So wearing a kippah has turned into the levush of a Jew, and therefore not wearing a kippah is going to be chukas akum. That's the way that goyim go, and therefore it would be an iser d'oraisa not to wear a kippah. So Rav Neventzel is very makbid about this. Rav Neventzel holds you should always be wearing a kippah, and he says it's a bigger chil Hashem, even if you're doing an avira, Rav Neventzel said one time in Yashir, that it's worse even to take off your kippah when you're doing an avira. You're going to trade for restaurants, even worse to take off a kippah because you're mamish porik ol. To wear a kippah is, even when you're doing, it's a fascinating thing, that how bad it is that to say to not wear a kippah. That was what Rav Neventzel said in context in this point. It's a very chamor din, and we try our best to be able to wear kippahs as much as possible. Okay, next Mishnah. So we know that the shoresh of the word yeled means birth. So the Mitzvah is discussing a different context of what a person means when he talks about this lashon. A neder mina yelodim. Someone who says a neder, asering benefit from yelodim, which usually implies those who are already born, right? The pasuk says, the Mefarish quotes, v'chol ha'am ha'yelodim, all the people that were born in the past. So clearly, then it would be mutter ben oladim, you'd be permitted to benefit from those who are going to be in the future, because the neder does not mean those who are born after. So you're only asering yourself from ana, from those who are already born. However, what if you say min ha'noladim? Min ha'noladim implies those who are going to be in the future. In the future, as we're going to see in the Hemshech, Chamar is going to quote this pasuk. So, asr min ha'yelodim. It's asr to derive benefit, even from those who are, all you were trying to do was include those who are going to be born as well in your nether in the future. But those in the past are also, zikr, going to surely be included in your nether. Rabbi Meir mater af bi'yelodim. Rabbi Meir permits to benefit even from those who are already born, which seems to be, so he's permitted from those who are already born, and those also seemingly are already born, those who are going to be born also seem to be permitted. So what's Rav Meir asking? The Gemara is going to ask that. The Chachamim omrim, lo neskaven ze elo misha darko livaled, the man intends only those who nature is to be born, meaning the Chachamim are explaining their argument right now. They're saying that Noladim is just trying to include the future people as well, but obviously, as we already mentioned, to include those who are already born should also vaday be included in his neder. So the Gemara says now, lo rebeir velo mebay Noladim. So if you're going to say Rav Meir is saying those who are already born are not included, and also those in the future are not included, so who in the world is Rav Meir saying is Asr? Obviously you made a neder Asring somebody, and according to Rav Meir, you're not Asring anybody. So what in the world is going on over here? So the Gemara says, it's a very dochak, when the Gemara has to do this, but the Gemara says, chasuri mechzer of achiktani, that the Mishnah is actually missing part of the text, so we have to amend the text of the Mishnah. That's something which the Gemara really does not like to do. Amending a text of the Mishnah is a very chamor thing. So the Gemara says, what are we forced to say? Because Rameh doesn't make any sense otherwise. We have to say the following. Hanoder mina yelodim muter min oladim. Someone who makes a neder, answering the yelodim, he's permitted to benefit from those who will be born in the future. Mina noladim, asr b'yelodim. However, if he says a neder, answering those from the ladim, then it's going to be asr bi'elodim, those who are already born. Rabbi Meir Omer afa noder min anoladim mutar bi'elodim. Rabbi Meir says those who are making a neder asring benefit from the noladim is permitted to benefit from those who are already born. Ki hechi noder min anoladim mutar min anoladim. Just as someone who is making a neder asring benefit from the yelodim is permitted to benefit from those who will be born. So in this way we're explaining the machlokas. Rabbi Meir is telling us that not only does yelodim only indicate a future tense, but Noladim also indicates, Yolodim rather is a past tense, Noladim also is indicating only of a future tense. The Chachamim say that Noladim really meant to imply both, so that is what they're arguing about. So the Gemara says, Amar ler papa labaye, lemerma de Noladim de misyaldin mashma, is that to say that the term Noladim indicates somebody who is born in the future, elamata, but we could say the opposite though, shnei banecha hanoladim lecha be'eretz Mitzrayim. And this is talking about Yaakov's bracha to Yosef, talking about Ephraim and Manasseh. And when Yaakov is dying, it's talking about the two children who are Noladim Lecha in Egypt. What do you mean, Noladim? In the future? No. Hachanami de Saldinu. You're going to tell me over there meant the future. We're talking about Ephraim Manasseh, who clearly already had been born. So Lechora, Noladim clearly means sometimes also things in the past. So the Gemara says, Ve'elamai de Aladu Mashma. You're going to tell me that Noladim only means those in the past? The pasuk is talking about that the times that there was a lot of idol worship during Yeravan, and there was a nevuah that there's going to come a descendant of Beis David who is going to be Yoshayahu, and is going to kill all of the people who are worshiping Avodah Zarah, and that those are makriv Avodah Zarah, and those were the actual mizbech that they're makriv them on, and that was done many, many years later. That was like 350 years after this nevuah was mentioned. And Hachanami Dahavi are going to argue to me that Nolad over there means was born Yoshea, not true, Va'adayin Menashe Labai. Yoshea's grandfather Menashe had not yet been born when this prophecy had been said. So obviously, this means something in the future. So therefore, the Gemara says, Ela Mashmachi, Mashmachi. The term Noladim would indicate sometimes the future, and also indicate sometimes the past. Uvenedarim Halach Achar Doshamani Adam. When it regards to Nedarim, we follow the common language. So we're basically explaining that Nolad is something can mean both. So the Machlokas Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is how do people generally use it? According to Rabbi Meir, when people use Nolad, it refers to people born in the future. The Chachamim disagree, and they say Nolad can also indicate people who are already born, and that's the way people speak as well. And therefore, they say that it includes that in his term as well. And that would be Nilodim. What about the word Yilodim? So everybody apparently agreed that the Lashon Bnei Adam, even though the Pasim Yilod, can be both the past and the future as well. V'chol Am HaYilodim BaMidbar. Those who are born in the Midbar, which clearly has a past tense, and then it says Kol HaBen HaYilod Tishlachoi, to throw them in the river, the Rambam points out, that can indicate the future. However, everybody agrees, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, that everybody used the word Yilod as somebody who had been born in the past tense, and that was Lashon Bnei Adam. That's why there is no machlokes with regards to that. Next point of the Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us, V'chachamim omrim lo niskavin zeh elav misha darko livalid. The Chachamim say the man intended only from those whose nature is to be born. So the Zezegmar, lafuke, what's it coming to exclude? Lafuke dagimofos, that birds and fish which has from eggs rather than from the people who are born, that's coming, that not going to be included in your nether. They are not going to be in the criteria of those who are born, therefore it's not in your nether. Okay, but Ezer Shem, we'll pick up with Anoder Meshov Se Shabbos Imer Shem tomorrow's stuff.